Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
I'm calling you from macOS Big Sur.
I'm answering you on macOS Catalina.
It's actually not true. I am using Big Sur on my iMac. But I'm still not, which I had all summer, so that's not news at all. And I'm actually calling you from a window in a Mac Mini that's running on Mojave. So I take it all back.
Yeah, that's...
It's a happy Big Sur release.
Why would you lie to me?
Macos 10 is dead. Macos 10 is gone. It's over. We're at 11 now. Macos 11 is here.
You know, it's funny. My column for next week for Macworld literally starts with, "The Mac is dead. Long live the Mac."
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been... another quiet week here in technology land.
Yeah, not much happening. New iPhones arriving today for people who got the iPhone 12 mini or Pro Max.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Just it forgot that happened. And then, yep. Of course, you are going to be able to get an Apple Silicon Mac next week, although not the one that I ordered and not the one that you ordered.
Yeah, although I was interested today... this morning, maybe it was last night, to check the order statuses on Apple's site and see that the MacBook Air I ordered is in preparing to ship mode.
Hmm.
And the HomePod Mini, which I also ordered and is supposed to come sooner, is still in processing mode.
Oh.
So,
who knows?
Who knows? What a mystery.
It is a bit of a mystery. There's lots going on. There was some leaked... leaked is not a way to put it. A dummy with an Apple Silicon Mac uploaded the Geekbench scores for it. So everybody has these scores that may be real, may not be real. Who knows? Nobody really can. They can't verify the provenance of it, but they look real. Geekbench doesn't upload by default. Like, you have to turn on the feature where you upload your results. However, it was brought to my attention this week that if you download it from their site and not from the Mac App Store, therefore you haven't bought it, there's a tryout mode. Tryout mode uploads the scores. So my theory is that a reviewer or somebody involved in some marketing plan for Apple who has one of these systems... is a cheapskate and didn't want to pay for Geekbench, and therefore their numbers got uploaded. That's my theory.
That's a...
because whoever did it is not supposed to do it. Like, that's not allowed. And also, mm-hmm. I will say, as somebody who has reviewed Apple hardware in advance many times, rookie mistake. Come on, people.
Well, but it's out there, and that bell can't be unrung. So
it's out there, and the numbers are pretty much in tracking with what we kind of extrapolated from the path of growth of the A14 and how much more an A14X would add to the party. Because somebody did the analysis and said that, you know, really, if you look at at some of the details of this chip, they're calling it the M1. It is very clearly the follow-up to the A12 X and Z. Like, very clearly, that's what it is.
Right.
It's not something like in development from Apple. This was considered obviously to be the next sort of performance step up from the base, which is the A14. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, obviously, they baked in a bunch of stuff that isn't in the A12Z that was in the developer test systems. There are features that they don't have. Apparently, the memory paging issues that they had in the DTK and the inability to do virtualization and all that. Like, all that stuff was because they were using an iPad chip. So, obviously, they built things in knowing that this would be a Mac chip that aren't in there. And they call it M1, but I think it will be borne out that it's essentially A14Z with a different marketing name, because you can call it whatever you want. And the numbers are amazing. Like, I'm torn because, and not to give too much away of like phrases that I'm thinking of using when I'm writing about these things in future columns and stuff, but like, these are low end systems.
Mm-hmm.
What's confusing about them is
They're outperforming the old high-end system.
They're faster than everything that isn't basically a Mac Pro or an iMac Pro.
Yeah, it's been interesting to see the, as you and I know, have both been, you know, following some of the commentary post Apple's event last week, and there is a vocal group of people out there who really claim that Apple are lying liars about the the claims they made. And I think you can divide that into a couple categories.
I wonder,
right?
How those people feel about the election. Do they think it's totally rigged?
I don't even want. It does feel like.
It's like reality. Here's the thing. Information. Yeah, okay.
There are a couple ways you can slice this, right? One is Apple is always going to use some degree of marketing hyperbole and some degree of cherry picking, right? Like any company is going to pick the stuff that makes its products look the
exactly,
best.
Exactly. They Apple doesn't lie, first off, because we know people who work in the performance marketing group, right? Because they hired so many people who used to work in the Macworld lab, work in the performance marketing group. They're the ones doing those tests that get quoted on stage. But Apple picks which tests they quote on stage, right?
Sure,
Apple
absolutely.
Picks the and they are picking the ones that make them look the best. There's no doubt about it. It's marketing. It's marketing.
That said, it's also not the type of company to make claims that it can't back up, right? It is a company that knows that we can't just go out here and say anything we want.
Well,
right?
It knows it'll get called on it too, right?
Yeah,
that's part
absolutely.
Of it too. When you make a marketing claim, it needs to look great, but also not be so egregious that it gets debunked and the debunking becomes a story.
You got to walk that line there. And I think that's the thing that people are struggling with, because it did seem like when Apple started touting these numbers, it's like, could that, first of all, the stuff that it's saying, like, could that possibly be true? And secondly, like, you know, okay, they're very careful to be specific about what they're quoting, right? Like, we had the chart of the power consumption, right, with those nice little curves on them.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, okay, there's a lot going on in that chart, but there's also stuff that's not necessarily demonstrated in that chart. Like, you're picking stuff that makes it look good. You're choosing to go with, graphs that have specific, you know, scales and marketing and like labels and stuff like that. But that said, you know, they're making an overall point, which is that these computers are really, really fast, just incredibly fast compared to its own previous computers and compared to what's out there on the market. And, you know, like you said, once those machines come out, and they will come out like a week later, people are going to be able to prove whether that's true or not.
Yeah, I think a lot of us who closely follow Apple also have noticed them playing this game for a while, because in 2008, in the fall, they did their Brooklyn event and they released the iPad Pro with the A14X or A12X. And that was when they started making claims about faster than 90% of PC laptops sold and stuff like that. That was the first time I recall that they made a claim like that. And it was a bold claim. They're basically saying this is faster than laptops and it's an iPad. That was also the moment where we all looked at each other like, oh, they're totally doing Mac Mac chips, right? Like they're making claims about this generation of iPad. Yeah, that is very clear. Like, well, okay, if it's faster, then why isn't it in your laptops now? And the answer is like, wait 2 years. So they've been making these claims for a while. And I agree, they're weird, but also, would I make those claims? No, but I'm not Apple and I don't work at Apple. I think that there is a counter argument to be made that by phrasing it the way they're doing, they're weighting their claims based on, like, they made a claim about the best selling laptop in its class,
right.
And they made a claim about percentage, you know, faster than 98% of the PCs sold, which is funny because, you know, it's going to hit the best sellers and not the edge cases. And now you could argue, like, well, that's what matters is the vast bulk of the market and not some weird edge case for a very expensive computer that's faster than this. You could make the counter argument, which is, but it's not faster than the 20 fastest PC laptops, which take up 2% of the market or whatever. Like you could make that counter argument. I think we saw Gordon Ma-Ung made that argument at PC World this week, which is like right in character for him. He's the loyal opposition. I could see it
starts sounding like car ads almost, right? Like the best selling SUV in its class, right? Like there's always an interesting way. How do you slice that? Like, what does that mean?
Yeah. And I think for their pride, they're trying to say we're way out in front and eat our dust, right? That's what they're saying. And that's fine. I think for a Mac user, like the faster than the last generation stuff is better. Although even there, I will say I rolled my eyes a little bit at saying, you know, at one point they make a comparison. It's a good comparison, but it's like to the 999 MacBook Air. It's like, come on.
Yeah.
Come on. That's the two core version. Like there's a four core version and with an i5 and there's one with an i7 and like you're comparing it to the, then again, I'm sure the 999 MacBook Air is their bestseller of MacBook Air. So maybe that is the fairest comparison. And most people aren't upgrading from the, if they've even got a Retina MacBook Air, it's probably not the 2019. It's probably like the 2018 version or the 2020. I think there's a 2019 and 18 MacBook Air Retina of Intel. So like, and it could be somebody like you who has got a non-Retina MacBook Air, and the speed difference between them is going to be gigantic. So I think in the end, the most telling thing is, and I know that Apple, this is tricky because they're cutting against their own computers, but like the most telling thing is all of these systems appear, like I said, to be faster, according to that Geekbench upload, in multi-core, faster than everything except Macs with Xeon, more or less, which is Mac Pro and iMac Pro, and in single core, faster than any Mac. And like, and those are the currently shipping models. Like, that's kind of all you need to know, I kind of think, right. Which is these are low-end systems that are better than all but the highest high-end desktops that Apple sells. And do you need to know more than that? Like, does it really matter that these low-end, again, low-end models, that's the other thing that I tried to make a point about this week. This is a MacBook Air and the 2-port 13-inch MacBook Pro and a Mac Mini that's silver and that really is kind of a low-end SKU of the Mac Mini. They're still selling the high-end Intel Mac Mini. That should tell you something. Like, for them to get the numbers with what is essentially the square one base low-end product is amazing, because you then have to use a little imagination and say, well, what does the mid-range and high-end look like if this is their low-end?
Yeah, I mean, let's also be clear that on the same, you know, the speed test that Apple shows off for these things is always geared at a very specific part of the market too, right? And like in this case, we're also talking about a part of the market that may or may not be target audience for any of these machines anyways, right? Because when it comes to benchmarking performance on stuff like, well, you know, going through your Final Cut Pro 8K video streams or, you know, crunching these huge multi-track audio files, like, those people are not buying this computer. Honestly, the benchmark scores don't matter to most of the people who are buying these computers. And it's the same reason that we saw, as I think we kind of discussed last week in anticipating these announcements, like it's the same reason that there's no clock speeds listed for any of these things, because Apple has wanted to get away from that for years, because quantifying it is very difficult for the average consumer. There are people who will tell you, yo, oh, this processor at this clock speed is better than this processor at this clock speed, and you'll get this much more performance out of it. But that's not the bulk of Apple's market, right? The bulk of Apple's market are people who look at a chip and say, well, this one's got a bigger number. I guess it's better. But like, even in recent years, as the generations of Intel processors have advanced, clock speeds have gotten lower in many cases. The clock speed on a MacBook Air that you buy now is, I believe, lower than the clock speed on my 2014 MacBook Air. It's a different generation of processor, right? Like, so that makes a difference, but it's not just this constant linear increase. And so at the end of the day, what matters is, you know, how good is this computer at doing the things that you do every day? And for most people, that is, how fast does it load? How fast does it wake from sleep? Which is, I know a lot of people have been, you know, arguing about why they discuss that. And I think it's something that feels measurable in some ways to people, like the average user. Like, oh, I hate having to open my computer and wait for it all to get ready, right? Like, that's something that people generally care about. How fast it launches apps, right? Like, something else that people care about that's like tangible to what am I doing every day, right? I'm not creating giant movie projects. I'm not like exporting audio files. I'm not doing 3D rendering. I just want to go to this website and have it be fast. So I think that's what ends up mattering in a large part. And I think if these computers deliver on that promise, then there is, you know, all the people who are complaining about that, it's not going to matter, because they are not the target audience. They are waiting for whatever comes out in Apple's chips next year.
And I get the fear of missing out, right? Of like, but it's not, this is something that I've seen repeatedly in the Apple world, and it's so weird, which is like, people get really angry when Apple releases a product that they don't want to buy.
Sure. Yep.
It's like, you know, it's not for you. Now, I get it that this is it's frustrating because the hardest core people who care about Apple stuff are probably ones who care more about the higher end features.
Mm-hmm.
And they are also the ones who care the most about Apple Silicon as a transition. And so they're the most hyped about these products.
Right.
And then these
right.
products are not for them. I think it's understandable to feel a little frustration. Also, though, you can turn it around and say, well, of course, the first thing Apple is going to do is the low end, because you got to walk before you run. Like, it's that simple. Yeah.
But I had somebody commenting on Twitter about the, like, they were very frustrated because they felt like the fanless design in the Air was holding it back, and it was an arbitrary limitation compared to the MacBook Pro. And I was sitting there thinking, aren't they all arbitrary limitations? I mean, they choose to a certain degree where to clock things. This is a choice that Apple has made.
Well,
but the point is that if you're only selecting based on processor speed, then okay, I can see why you think that. But the trade-offs of, say, not having the active cooling system in your computer is something that a lot of people will find attractive.
Right.
Like, that is a distinction.
Yeah, a fanless design is not... Also, somebody... I was looking at the iFixit teardown of the old MacBook Air, the 2020 MacBook Air. The fan, it's laughable. There's no heat pipe, apparently. So, like, literally, there's just a fan in there moving the air around. Like, there's no focus at all. It's not great. Like, it's not a super effective fan. And it can get pretty loud. And I think Apple... Okay, let me throw this in the mix, too. We talked about the MacBook possibly being the first mm-hmm. ARM Apple system. And Apple killed the MacBook, the 12-inch MacBook. And, you know, there are a lot of stories behind that. But I think... I think that was the plan, but what sealed its fate is that it didn't sell very well and people wanted to buy the MacBook Air. And so finally Apple was like, look, we're going to get rid of the MacBook and just do the MacBook Air instead. And that's where we are now. And I guess that MacBook's never coming back, because the MacBook Air has been redefined now as fanless, right? Like, it's filling the gap that left by that fanless 12-inch MacBook, because Apple feels like a fanless laptop, a silent laptop, is a product people want.
Yeah.
And that people will opt for silence over performance. And I, you know, I don't think it's a bad differentiator to make between those two things. And I got to be honest, I bought a MacBook Air. You bought a MacBook Air. Like, we're not, you know, the newbies here. And we're like, no, I want that. That's what I want.
Yeah, because I mean, in both
cases.
Also,
I don't want the touch bar.
Yeah, well, that's part of it. And the other case is, like, you and I, neither of us is a laptop-only person either. So, you know, we can afford to get a slightly less powerful Mac there,
although,
because we have all their Macs.
I'm just saying.
It's still faster.
Looking at the Geekbench scores, I think my $5,000 iMac Pro from 2 years ago is slower than the MacBook Air is.
Oh, yeah. This will certainly outpace my iMac on some things. It's a little bonkers. I can't quite get my head around it. But I will say, you know, I'm sad on the one hand because I loved my... I'm giving up my 11-inch MacBook Air. And as several people, including our old colleague Rob Griffiths, pointed out, the differentiation, like, weight-wise between the Air and the Pro now is, like, 0.2 pounds.
Yeah.
Like, it's no longer quite the super light computer, because all the computers are very light.
Yeah, and I gotta say, this is why I'm sad that the MacBook went away, because I do think that the MacBook design as a, you know, thin and light laptop for an ARM, you know, system, I think is a good one, and that people like us who really like the 11-inch Air would really dig having an ARM 12-inch MacBook. I'm not precluding it coming back. I think if it comes back now, it's going to be a MacBook Air. They're going to call it we're going to get the 12 and 13-inch MacBook Air or something, and they're just going to do it that way.
Not the MacBook Mini? Come on, they've got a smaller phone even now.
I know.
A smaller... Yeah.
But if they do it, I think they'll do it like that, but I'm skeptical that it'll ever come back. It's too bad, because I do think that you could push the thinness and lightness even more than they're doing now. But I think the MacBook Air has just earned its right. The 13-inch MacBook Air has earned its right to exist, because it's just so popular. People want. It's the shape people want.
I bought it because it's the closest thing I'm ever going to get, at least in the foreseeable future. And, you know, once they resolved the issue with, like, the keyboard and stuff like that, I felt like, there's no reason not to. And it's honestly these days, especially because I don't go anywhere. Well, it doesn't, that extra pound or so is not really making a huge difference in my life.
And it isn't almost, I mean, like it's smaller than the old 13 inch Air. It is closer to the 11 inch.
It's not too far from the 11 inch. It's still heavier. That's the big thing. Yeah. It's still measurably heavier. But other than that, is actually pretty close to that 11 inch. So yeah, I agree with you. I think there is room for that MacBook product, and maybe they are, that's something that they're eyeballing for, you know, a couple of years out. But right now I think that Air is a great choice for a lot of people. And for me, you know, like I said, going back to that fanless thing, as I commented this week, like I think I had turned on like messages in the cloud on my MacBook Air, which is my Big Sur test machine, and it just started ramping. Like it was, you know, aircraft takeoff levels, and it was getting like really warm and all of that. And I was like, I would trade this for something that is quieter and doesn't get quite as hot, probably. And furthermore, I think my biggest issue is, as anybody who's ever taken apart a PC knows, you know what fans do? They collect dust, just tons and tons of dust, and then they don't work as well, and then your cooling doesn't work as well, and your fans ramp up more. And it's like, honestly, if you can achieve the same thing with some sort of passive cooling system, then I'm here for that.
And battery life, let's throw that in there too.
Like
this is and it's hard to quantify, and I know people are going to do tests. I always am reluctant to do battery testing because it takes forever.
It's also you know, like it's testing, but it's like, well, what are you using it for? Everybody's load is a little bit different.
Yeah.
Nobody's ever using it in those ideal circumstances.
That's why the video playback is the one that amuses me, because that's literally like we just set a video to loop. Look, I said it earlier. Like, I know how these tests work because the Macworld Lab used to do these tests, and I think they're still doing them at Apple. Like, wireless web is a scripted thing where they're scripting the interface to move and scroll through web pages and stuff like that, and they do that until the battery dies. And video playback is literally you loop a thing and wait for it to die. And I think in a lot of cases what they do is they have stuff playing in the background and they have an audio thing that's attached and that logs when the audio drops, which is when the computer died, so that they don't have to be there watching it, waiting for it to die. They actually use like an audio. I mean,
there's only so many times you can watch all three Lord of the Rings extended editions back to back before you give up on it. I think it's, you know, but to that point, most of us don't do any of those, you know, like we don't single task on our computers for 15 hours straight. We're doing a bunch of different stuff. And so reality is you'll get a little less, but even so, even if you take that haircut, you're still going to be looking at a performance, which is way better, because we're just looking at a way to compare these things, you know, literally apples to apples, and say the old MacBook Air in the same test got this.
Yeah, and that's where this thing really strikes me. And I know we're going to get more of this with whatever M1X or whatever happens next, but for these baseline models, like the truth is, the chart said it all. That was that chart that was so sad. That's the Intel chart. That's like, look at our progress on Intel the last 4 years. And it's this little tiny thing. Fact is, every year the speed bump for these systems has been 10%, you know, 8%, 12%. It's been like that. Maybe 20% if you're lucky. And battery life has remained, you know, mostly constant, a little bit better. Both of those things take enormous leaps forward with these systems, and that's what you get in a processor transition. And next, you know, the next MacBook Air won't get that. They'll get something in line with the iPhone going from A13 to A14, right? They'll get the more incremental boost. But in this moment, you've got a MacBook Air being sold today that is, you know, maybe twice as fast and has maybe 80% more battery life. And then your low-end MacBook Pro, that two-port MacBook Pro, is, you know, several times faster and has twice the battery life. And it's big.
It's in line with what we were talking about last week in the expectations, because the simple answer is, although Apple, there's a strategic value to it, obviously, for controlling its own processors, it also wasn't going to do this if the results weren't way better, because it is expensive, right? Changing your processor, especially, I mean, even for Apple, which has done this a couple times before, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of, you know, adaptation and making sure things work smoothly. You know, it's jumping into an unknown, although, again, Apple has been making chips for a decade now. But, you know, they were doing it because they were confident that it was going to be not just better, but significantly better. And I mean, that's, like you said, it's the same thing that when the made the jump to Intel before, right? Like, they jumped to Intel because it was going to be a significantly better solution than where PowerPC was in those days. I do like, by the way, that we've now come basically full circle back around to RISC chips, because that was like the argument of my youth was like the RISC chips are way superior because of the reduced instructions that you would fight with the PC nerds on the playground in high school.
Yeah, it's a rare moment for Apple and for people who buy Apple products, but like I love about it is it's exactly what we thought it was, which is you move to ARM Max and they're going to be faster and have better battery life. In fact, originally the thought was at least they'll have better battery life, we'll see if Apple can do what needs to be done in order to support a computer, a real computer, and not just a mobile device. But that takes me back again to Brooklyn in 2018, in October of 2018, when they released that iPad Pro, because that was them laying that card down, which is like, this is a real computer. Like, this is part of them casting the iPad Pro as a real computer was about the iPad and Apple's belief in the potential of the iPad. But part of it was about Apple saying, their architecture is not lesser in any way than other people's and Intel's PC architecture, and this is the fruit of that. That was laying the groundwork for where we are now. The best result of all of this is going to be if these things just feel like regular Macs, right? Like, I think that's why Apple is making these systems. Like the Mac Mini, you can tell it has fewer ports because it only has the two. The M1 clearly only supports two Thunderbolt ports, and only supports 16 RAM. So it doesn't, these are low-end chips. They're low-end chips. They're going to go somewhere else. But if you pick up a MacBook Air or a MacBook Pro when they come out next week, you should, unless you've memorized the model number and have really good eyesight, because, they inscribe that on the back, on the underside of the computer, you should not be able to tell the difference. Like, Apple made a conscious decision to not change anything about the exterior of these systems. The keyboard's got a couple different silk screens on some of the keys. They added some other keyboard control stuff. But like the outside, the aluminum shell is literally the same aluminum shell on both of those laptops. And that's part of the point of what they're doing here. And that's why they want to reassure people. In fact, I would wager that there will be lots and lots of people who are going to buy a MacBook Air in the next 6 months who have no awareness that there was a processor transition. And that's how it should be. It's like, it's got better battery life, it's faster, and...
Yeah, I mean, you picture someone going into an Apple store and looking at their laptop options. But, MacBook Air. Yeah,
it's not weird.
It's not an iPad.
It's just a Mac. It's a Mac like That is the... If they do this right, that should be the net result, right? Nothing changed, except it's faster and has better battery life.
Yeah, and again, that was the same play that they made with Intel, right? Like,
right.
They changed the name, and that was it. But it looked pretty much identical. Like, the Intel iMac looked exactly the same.
The MacBook Pro looked the same, exactly.
Yeah, so I think that's, and I sort of laid out in my column at the beginning of the week, like, there's basically two ways this can go, and one is like... One is this, the way they chose, which is let's keep everything as close as possible. And the other way was like, let's demarcate a radical differentiation here. And they chose not to go that way. And I think for exactly the reasons that we're talking about, it's sort of a continuity issue. And I think doesn't mean we won't see these designs refined, after the next, step down the road, right? The next revision of the MacBook Air, who knows? Maybe they will decide to revamp it more significantly now that the transition part is over. But that's probably a couple of years off at this point. So, yeah, I don't know. It's interesting, and it definitely raises a lot of interesting theories about what this is going to look like next year. Because I think next year is potentially, more. It's those systems, I think, are going to be things that are, like we talked about, ones that people expect a lot of performance out of. And while it's clear that the performance capabilities are there, it's also going to be, I feel like, a tougher audience in some ways.
Sure.
When, Mac Pro or a new iMac Pro, if they decide to make another one, come down the pipe there.
Yeah, that may be 2022. I feel like their next on their agenda's got to be iMacs and the higher-end laptops. Mm-hmm. and then they let the Mac Pro sit for a while. I fear there will never be another iMac Pro. I feel like maybe its day is over, but I think this is going to be our next set of questions. It's on the to-do list for what's next, which is, are they going to do the iMac and leave it unchanged, or are they going to do something more radical to it and give it a redesign? Because it feels like it has deserved a redesign for a while. I'm still thinking that, you know, this is the question, right? Do they just come out with Apple Silicon iMacs and not worry about it and then change it later? Or do they come out with, especially the smaller iMac, like, I feel like that would be a great place to fire a shot of, like, we've rethought this iMac. And there were rumors about they're doing a larger, like a 24-inch iMac. That might be an opportunity. And also on the laptop side, there's been that rumor that's been persistent for more than a year about the 14-inch MacBook Pro. And I look at this 2-port 13-inch MacBook Pro and I think, oh, maybe that's it. Maybe the 4-port model with Apple Silicon goes to 14. And that's how they differentiated a little bit more from this sad little 2-port model that should probably just be called MacBook at this point because it's not super pro. But you're right. The challenge with Apple there is, how do you satisfy more professional customers? You have to give them more RAM. You have to give them, and there's a question about that. Like, are they going to stick with their on-package RAM for pro systems?
Right.
And like,
right,
you can get 64 gigs of RAM, but it's not on a module. It's just integrated and you just have to pay for it. And then it's that way forever. Are they going to, you know, because it's obviously much more complicated and not something they've done on iOS, so it would make sense that it would have to come later. But like at some point, presumably, they're going to need to do, you know, support for an external GPU.
Or even a potentially still a discrete GPU.
Yeah,
Exactly. Well, it seems unlikely they can keep going with just their own graphics.
Just their own.
I mean, their own graphics are great, but they're not, they're still going to pale in comparison, probably.
Although there is a question, like, maybe RAM options are for the high end with more cores in 21, and then 22 is when the point where they get to a chip. Like, I feel like in the M1 architecture, they could scale it up and have an M1X and probably put that in the iMac and maybe even in the MacBook Pro, and it would be okay. Like, it would be, and with a higher memory footprint. But at some point, they have to deal with the fact that, you know, either they need to show that their graphics performance scales so much that it doesn't matter, or they're going to have to grapple with the fact that, especially by the time they get to the Mac Pro, you know, they're going to have to support external video cards. Like, they're going to have to do it. And that's further afield from anything they've done. So it's logical that that would take longer, but they are going to have to figure that out at some point.
In the same way that, I mean, they sold the Mac Pro predicated on the whole idea of expansion, right? Like, that was the big thing. And so if you're going to be able, like you said, you have to be able to support cards, which includes graphics cards, because that's probably the number one thing that people are putting in an expandable computer with a PCI bus.
Whereas
is graphics
a 16-inch MacBook Pro needs graphics performance. It doesn't necessarily need an expandable graphics card kind of thing. Yes. Although people do use eGPUs and these chips don't support them, and I think those are intertwined, and I think that may be a thing that doesn't happen until an M2 generation of chip, where, because, you know, you got to start somewhere, and they started with what they know, and then they obviously have to put some additional resources in to create more Mac features in these chips that an iPad never needed, but the Mac needs.
There's also an argument that, like, you know, you prioritize and you put things on the chopping block, and it's like, well, we need eGPU support, but maybe not on the low-end computers, so maybe that's just something we don't have to worry about right now,
exactly,
and we'll get there later.
We'll get there either with an M1X or with an M2, and I think the fullness of time will reveal everything, obviously, but I do think that the great shorthand, I mentioned this in my post earlier this week after the event, is look at where they're still selling Intel. That tells you that they feel that these systems don't replace those systems. And so we talk about the MacBook Pro, but it's really the 2-port 13-inch MacBook Pro. They still sell the 4-port Intel 13-inch MacBook Pro because they're not replacing that. And that is a discrete system from, even though it's stupid because there shouldn't be two 13-inch MacBook Pros, it's been like that for the last like 4 or 5 years. And likewise, the Mac Mini. Like, maybe I'll be proven wrong, but I feel like one of two things is going to happen with the Mac Mini. Either next year there will be an M2 Mac Mini with way more RAM configurations and more ports on it, and it will replace the one M1 that we got this week. Or they're going to do another SKU of Mac Mini, maybe even next year sometime with the M1X or whatever. And that's the one that's going to have more ports and stuff and will be more expensive. And I actually, like, people are mad about the Mac Mini because it's a regression in some ways, and it totally is. But they're still selling the other Mac Mini, and that's why they're still selling it. So I do think, I'm bullish on the future, to talk like Tim Cook.
Yeah.
I'm bullish on the future of the Mac Mini, and this is really a low-end Mac Mini. And honestly, I kind of like that there's a cheaper entry to the Mac Mini, because that was one of the criticisms 2 years ago.
Yeah.
But they need to address the higher end market, because that is part of the Mac Mini's appeal too. And I think they will, because that's why that Intel Mac Mini is still there, is because they know this doesn't fulfill all the needs people have for a Mac
Mini. And it's interesting to see what things, other things will fall by the wayside potentially. Like, you know, we were talking on the Rebound this week, you know, the Mac Mini, the Intel Mac Mini from this, when the most recent revision, they brought back the ability to put in RAM, which had been gone for a little while, because it was buried. And it's like, well, you're definitely not seeing that with the M1, but is there an option at a higher, you know, in an M2 or something like that, or an M1X to add RAM? Because that is one thing that people do like about the Mini, is it does have some customization. But with all the stuff on the die, like, you can't.
I think that this is a real question, is philosophically, does Apple think that you need to have modular RAM or not? And I'm not sure they do. I don't know how much I would bet about that. But I feel like eventually they need to get there for the pro systems. But I also think that Apple is not entirely convinced that people need the ability to pop in RAM modules. I'm not convinced of that. I feel like supporting external cards in a Mac Pro is something that they are convinced of, but I'm not
sure. They designed an entire computer around it, which felt
exactly,
you know, like an answer, right? Because people had complained they didn't like that about the trash can Mac Pro. So like, that was a differentiator. And of course, there has been a rumor floating around too about a smaller Mac Pro.
Right.
Like the mythical mid-range Mac.
Mythical next Mac, maybe.
Yeah. It rears its head again. But I don't know. I mean, that is a question, because you look at, if you use the mobile device stuff as a pattern, right? And like, clearly they are making some things that are different choices for a Mac, and realizing that the Mac is a different product from an iPad or an iPhone. But the tendency has been towards not only things like, hey, let's not talk about clock speeds, which, again, we're not really doing here, and let's not even discuss RAM. Like, at least there were options for RAM in this, right? Which was not a given going in this week. Was, do they just say, you get as much RAM you get? Like, that's it. But, like, at least you had the option to go, you know, and get 8 or 16 in these things.
Right.
But I don't know. I don't know either, right? Like, how much is Apple married to that idea? I feel like part of them has wanted to get away from it for a long time, but people will cry bloody murder if those high-end Macs don't have the ability to swap the RAM.
Yeah,
they just will.
Culturally, we, you know, it would be different if, in the history of computers, RAM was always just attached to the processor and couldn't be detached, right? But culturally, computers haven't been defined that way. And that Apple is constantly fighting against that, right? Because Apple has its view of, like, well, this is how it should be. Like, we shouldn't have to quote speed, like, in megahertz.
Right.
So we won't, and they don't. And these chips are not like that, right? Like, the marketing isn't like that. Well, that's at least they list the RAM and let you pick it. Like, they could have made the MacBook Air always 8 and the MacBook Pro 16 and, that's it. And then you're picking
you want
storage,
more RAM,
like,
buy a better computer. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So they could go down that path, and they've at least made that adjustable, which is fascinating to see. Like, what do they choose from a traditional computer buying experience to put in? Because part of me thought that they would like eliminate all choice, and that I'm a little surprised. But it does help them in the upsell, right? They're like, MacBook Air starts at $999, and then all of us go out there. I mean, I don't know about you. I bought it with 16 and a 512 SSD. So my $999 MacBook Air, because I did buy the $999 model, because I don't care about the 8th GPU core, save $50. It was $999 because I upgraded. So, like, they don't want to turn those people away. And so there is a monetary benefit to offer the ability to spec things up.
I bought the same $999 model, but I upgraded to 16 gigs of RAM, but only 256 because that's what's on my current MacBook Air, which I don't store a lot of files on.
Right.
Most stuff is cloud-based, so I don't bother. And I am not even using the full amount on my current one, so I'm not too worried about that. We'll see. Maybe I'll second guess myself in a year when my MacBook Air is full, and I'm very sad.
Yeah.
But I think I'll be okay.
You just duct tape an SSD on the back of it.
Oh,
it'll be fine.
It works great. Yeah, yep. I'm immensely looking forward to that computer. I wish wasn't at the state. Like I feel like I'm back at last week, Jason, where I'm just refreshing one website over and over again to see if something has changed.
That's right. Good news. They've recounted the number of MacBook Airs.
Oh, and, good.
There's some mail-in ballots from China have come in to show that the MacBook Air is shipping sooner than you thought. So congratulations.
That'd be great.
But you're never getting that HomePod Mini, though. Sorry.
No, it's not happening.
It's not going to happen. All right. Well, this was a big week. I'm sure there'll be something for us to talk about next week, too, because it's 2020, man.
Keep rolling.
Get it out of here. Beat it. Move to the exits. But until then, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.